This is the Public Radio Hour, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. Tonight, we celebrate Women's History Month with a series of interviews from our community newsroom. We'll revisit the past with Dr. Joyce Neighbors, one of NASA's earliest female engineers.
I wasn't encouraged to engineering. I was discouraged.
A discovery by astrophysicist Dr. Colleen Wilson-Hodge and her gamma-ray burst monitor team changed the way we think about the universe.
About an hour later, a little less than an hour later, we got an email from our colleague Tyson Littenberg saying, "Wake up, this trigger has a friend."
Entrepreneurs Joy Ragland and L'Oreal Jones share some advice for the future.
Honestly, whatever is for you is for you. And whatever happens for you, it doesn't only happen for you, it happens for the person that's watching you.
We'll also hear about incredible people from our Unfamous Women of History project. That's next on the Public Radio Hour, right after this news update. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. I'm Brett Tannehill. Tonight, we'll visit with four Huntsville women and hear their ties to the past, present, and future, as told through interviews by the WLRH Community Newsroom. We'll hear from Joy Ragland and L'Oreal Jones, two members of Huntsville's business community who are helping mentor the next generation of womanpreneurs. We'll also talk about cosmic collisions and a historic discovery with Dr. Colleen Wilson-Hodge, leader of NASA's Gamma Ray Burst Monitor Team, and we'll visit with one of NASA's earliest female engineers, Dr. Joyce Neighbors, who worked on Explorer 1 and helped launch America's space race. But first, we asked you to share the story of an important female presence in your life and record yourself taking our self-interview as part of our Unfamous Women of History project. This entry came from Cricket Hoffman about her sister, Jess.
Who am I and where do I live? My name is Cricket Hoffman, and I live in Huntsville, Alabama. Who is a woman in my life that I admire? I admire my little sister, the late Jessica Haugenset. How did I first meet this person, and what was my first impression of her? I met her for the first time in 1989 at the New Orleans airport. I had come to visit my father, and it was my first time ever seeing Jess. My first impression was how happy and sweet she was. My favorite thing about this person is her sense of humor and how, no matter what happened in all of life, she could always make us laugh. My favorite story about this person, there are so many, but when she was little and the Madness song, Our House, would come on the radio, she would always add in Bomp and My Big Toe to the chorus. And so forever, when any of us felt uncomfortable or sadness or scared, we would yell out My Big Toe. Why is the world a better place because of this person? The world is a better place because of the way that Jess raised her children. When she passed away, they were 12, 16, and 17, and they already had everything they needed to survive without a mother. She taught them how to be strong in the face of everything and always see the bright side. What is the most important thing this person has taught me? Jess taught me how to forgive people, even when they were wrong. To always love them through. And it has served me well. If I could say one thing to this person, what would it be? I would say, Jess, look at how amazing your children are. You really did an excellent job, and I love you. Thank you for leaving me with such beautiful beings.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around.
Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house,
That was Cricket Hoffman sharing the story of her sister Jess through our Unfamous Women of History project. Find all the audio from tonight's show at WLRH.org and on the WLRH Facebook page. We'll have another entry later this hour. But now, let's step back into the past, to the 1950s. Boy, was it a different time for women back then. Even though they had some of the brightest minds, women didn't get a fair chance to prove it. But as America and Russia raced to make their mark in space, attitudes began to change. One Huntsville woman, Dr. Joyce Neighbors, played a critical role as one of NASA's earliest women engineers. Dr. Neighbors sat down with NASA's Brian Odom to talk about her early inspirations towards science, technology, engineering, and math, now known as the STEM subjects. Dr. Neighbors says back then there weren't any inspirations, except for her mother.
I grew up in poverty, and there was no encouragement from anyone in my teaching or that was in the family. No one had an education. And so I didn't have any motivation toward STEM. I was a quick learner, and my mother was a genius. She had been denied an education because her dad said, women don't need an education. We need you here to help with our babies. She was totally frustrated her whole life that she was not able to get an education. So the motivation was not necessarily for STEM, but it was for education. And I didn't have any encouragement from school. I did well in physics and math, and I knew when I was in the fifth grade that I was gifted in math because the teacher had a problem that she could not work. We had a problem in the book. I worked that problem, and the teacher could not do it. But anyway, when the Jacksonville State came to recruit students from my senior high school, they asked who all is going to college, and I raised my hand. When they left, my teacher called me out, and she told me, said, I saw you raise your hand. Now, you know you're not going to college. Your parents can't send you. I have a very good friend that is a nurse, head nurse in Birmingham, and I want you to think about, I will put in a good word for you. And I said, well, Mrs. Yarbrough, I don't want to be a nurse. And she said, oh, darling, you don't go to surgery the first day. She was very proper. I said, yeah, I know you carry the bedpan a couple of years, and then you can go to surgery. I was so angry with her. I mean, I didn't like her anyway, and she did not like me. But I do think she was sincere about helping me, but only what I deserved to be helped, because women could either be teachers, nurses, secretaries. That's what, at the backward area that I came from, which is still pretty backward, those were the things that women could do. And it has, of course, improved from there. But I didn't start college until I was 19. I had graduated at 17. And the reason I didn't, I couldn't find a job that paid enough money to save anything. So I was a telephone operator. And my brother went to Auburn to register for his master's degree. He had come out of the World War II and had a GI Bill. And I rode down to Auburn with him, but I didn't know anything about a campus. I knew nothing about who did what to whom in the registrar or anybody that could maybe have even helped me get a scholarship. But anyway, he took several hours, and I went over to the telephone office because I knew some connection there. And I was talking with the chief operator, and she told me, she said, now we've got a girl that is graduating this year that works 4 to 12 at night, and that position is open. I thought, man, if somebody else can do it, I know I can do it. And so I did. And I worked for the telephone office. And I wasn't encouraged to engineering. I was discouraged. I didn't know as much as I needed to. You know, I grew up, we didn't have telephone, we didn't have running water, we didn't even have electricity, we didn't have newspaper. I mean, I grew up kind of in a tribe of relatives, and that was all I knew. None of them had education, so I was just out in the world, you know, and trying to find. But I was also bright enough to, you know, pick up on what to do and so forth.
Once you got going into college and you began to move on and think about careers, what career opportunities in the math and science world did you think were open to you, or how did you find out about those?
I didn't. I just wanted an education. But my brother had majored in mathematics, so I majored in mathematics. But I did a double minor in physics. And when I got through that, when I graduated, I did a year of graduate work in physics. The engineering department was very closed. They didn't forbid women, but they discouraged women. And I didn't think I had the skills to take on the engineering department to try to make myself a part of it. So I settled for math and physics, but mainly physics, because that was the thing I would want to have a master's in. Mm-hmm. I did get married from, I graduated in 54, and I got married Christmas 53, and I graduated in March of 54. I did take all of my electives in engineering. Okay. I was not welcome in some of the classes, in one of the classes. But he announced that he thought I, to the whole class, he thought I was wasting my time and his too. He picked on me the whole semester or quarter, and I worked my butt off to be sure I had answers to whatever he wanted to ask. At the end of the semester, I had a spider bite on my ankle, and it swelled up real big, and they put me in the infirmary, and I missed my final exam. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've had it now. He can flunk me because they can give me a zero on the final exam. And as soon as I got out of the infirmary, I went to his office and asked him, when could I take the exam? And he said, well, anytime you want to. He said, but Miss Kerr, I want to tell you, you're one of the best students I have ever taught. I mean, I was so pleased to hear him. He said, if you ever need someone to give you a recommendation, you can certainly use me. He had been retired from Bell Labs, which back then was the technology center in the U.S. But anyway, that was a very nice turnaround that he did learn something, I think, from having me in his class, because he thought women just couldn't hack it, you know, and most of us can't. Even now, you know, there's still some barriers, mental barriers there, I think.
Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, all these experiences you've had up until this point, the barriers that existed. What are some of those barriers that are there? I mean, I'm sure you're one of very few women who are working in the areas that you're working in. What were some of those barriers there?
Well, there were two mathematicians that were already there, Billy Robinson and Doris Chandler. Were both there. I think Billy was the first woman with the Von Braun team that was of a technical nature. Doris, I believe, of course, she would have been second, and I was the third woman. But they had not hired anyone that was competitive in the engineering arena, because physics and engineering are pretty much parallel. They just separate out when it comes to applications, but the fundamentals of physics and engineering are the same.
What were some of the first projects that you really got involved in?
In 56, I came there, and I did the trajectory for the first 29C missile, which went in August before the Russians went in October. And I did the trajectory and the tilt program. Eisenhower had specified that the Navy would be first to launch. I believe they had someone in Defense Department checking on the trajectory to make sure that Von Braun wasn't going to put something in orbit. So we had to shape the trajectory so that it didn't go to orbit. But it got a lot of velocity, and they justified the program for testing the nose cone in high velocity. But it was actually a test of the first configuration that eventually took us to orbit.
We all talk about the Germans and their cultural contributions to the area and the differences, you know, between the American contingent and the Germans. Was there anything unique about the Germans and their position on having women in mathematics?
Well, there was. Not so much having women in mathematics, but I think where they draw the line is engineering. And all the men are engineers. When I came, I was the odd man, odd woman, whatever you call it, has invaded their territory. And that was the mathematicians, they seemed to accept, because their teacher maybe was a mathematician, a math teacher. They weren't hostile, but they did not accept having some woman. I think, in fact, I always had to prove myself when I moved from one place to the other. I had to prove that I was good enough to be one of them. That didn't offend me. I really got tired of it. But it was not offensive. I would do the same thing, because I like to test others. Do they measure up to what my values are?
Well, did that change, you know, over the years, and you gain more seniority, you're at the head of these programs, you're chief engineer. How did that change, and what did that change look like?
When we went to the moon, we had thousands and thousands of people working on that project. And we didn't have support for that after we landed. The money was cut back. I think there were several thousand engineers that worked at Marshall. So there was a big layoff. But my boss told me when they were cutting back that my husband had a good job and they were going to take my job. And I said, Mr. Mandel, I don't accept that. And he said, well, there's not anything you can do about it. I said, you may be surprised. And he was, and I was too. I was very surprised. The fact was, and I learned this later, I found while I was cleaning up some correspondence to the head of NASA and the subheads all the way down to the centers, that there was mandatory rules being in placed that they were not treating women well. And I did not know that at the time, because I figured I can find enough aggravation to keep them busy just on my own. But anyway, that was, I think, the thing that turned it around.
I've heard that scenario play out several times where women were approached during RIFs, you know, reduction in forces, where they said, well, your husband has a job, you know, so why would you need a job? And so that's such a common...
Well, I told my boss, I'll divorce him and just live with him if that's a problem. I'm serious. He wasn't going to have my job. I had 16 years. I wasn't going to start over. And I was just going to be a troublemaker if that's the way it was. But as it turned out, I never told anybody. If anybody approached me wanting to talk about it, I would not talk about it because I was keeping my end of the bargain. I was staying on the team, and my team was the number one priority to me. Now, I'm talking about it because I do think it's important to illuminate how far we have come and how far NASA has come. Women probably still have to be a little bit better than their competitors or their co-workers until they get known. When I got known, it never even crossed my mind that I was talking to some sexist. When I went to GPB, I did interview a guy. He was a manager on a space lab project, and he was not very diplomatic, and I think he was removed because of that. He's dead now. And he came to me to interview me for my deputy. So he come in, he had a shirt that had Western, had on a Western shirt, great big old belt buckle. He was a big, tall fella, standing up as tall as he could be. I told him, come over and sit down at the table. And he said, well, before I sit down, I just need you to know that I have never worked for a woman before. And I said, well, I hadn't either, so I really couldn't help you.
We've kind of talked about this already, but mentorship and how important that is to an organization like NASA, a big organization that's very complex. Were there any female mentors along the way for you? I mean, you've kind of mentioned it.
I was it. I was the first engineer that came in. Now, there were two mathematicians, but I was the first pseudo-engineer because I was not I have a master's degree now in engineering and a doctorate in engineering. But then I was educated as a physicist, and I don't want to inflate anything to imply I did not hire in as an engineer. In fact, I hired in as a mathematician, but they changed it immediately. I was a mathematician for about 3 months.
That brings up a good question, though. If you going through what you've gone through and times are hopefully changing, but going through what you've gone through, what advice would you give a young woman who was preparing for a career in STEM?
Well, study English. Learn English, because if you're gifted in STEM, any of those areas, you will do well if you really want to. If you're not gifted, I would suggest that you find where your gift is and follow that, because there's a lot of dog work in any kind of job you have. You got to do a lot of stuff that you don't like. There's no silver bullet, but work to see what your talent is. If you don't know, if you're just maybe in high school now, you would want to zero in on where your best talent is, because that's where you will be the best. The STEM, the reason that they have the acronym, is it is four different fields of expertise. But the English, I do think, is a hurdle. If you know everything, but if you can't communicate it, it's not worth anything. Because it's because you are always a member of a team. And you have to be able to communicate in writing, in speaking, and in gestures or whatever else. But communication is equally as important as what you know. Because you're no one's an island. No one knows enough or is good enough to stand alone in this world.
This is the Women's History Month episode of the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, and that was retired NASA engineer and math whiz Dr. Joyce Nabors speaking with Brian Odom about the early days for women in America's space program. She helped change views about how women could contribute if given the chance, and contribute they have in many ways. Astrophysicist Dr. Colleen Wilson-Hodge leads a team of researchers that works with NASA's Gamma Ray Burst Monitor, also known as the GBM. Her team recently won the prestigious Rossi Prize for discovering, okay, hold on to your hats here, for discovering the gamma ray counterpart to a gravitational wave sent by a cosmic collision of two neutron stars. Why does that matter? Well, that discovery helped prove that the speed of gravity is the same as the speed of light, as predicted by Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity about 100 years ago. So engage your brain and lean in, as WLRH Community Newsroom producer Mitzi Adams talks with Dr. Wilson-Hodge about that special moment when those two stars smashed together 130 million light years away.
What we saw on August 17th was what happens when you have two of these stars, and when they merge, lots of things happen. And lots of things happen that we saw that day. Gravitational waves are emitted from the merger itself. And at essentially the same time, gamma rays are emitted in what's called a short gamma ray burst that lasts about 2 seconds. With the GBM detectors, we see about 40 of those short gamma ray bursts a year. This is the first time that we've seen one at the same time as gravitational waves were detected. And this event kicked off observations around the world at all wavelengths. It's been detected in the optical, and I believe it continues to be detected in the X-ray and radio. The gamma rays were very short-lived. Like I said, they lasted 2 seconds. Our contribution to the event was big because our satellite automatically detects these gamma ray bursts and tells us. So 14 seconds after the event, we all got a notice on our phones. And that didn't immediately seem like a big deal because we get those frequently. We see some sort of gamma ray burst or some sort of other thing that triggers the satellite once a day. But then about an hour later, a little less than an hour later, we got an email from our colleague Tyson Littenberg, who's part of the gravitational waves team and part of GBM, saying, "Wake up. This trigger has a friend." And they had found in the LIGO data that one of their interferometers had lit up with a signal, but they also had one that they'd worked on with us where they took our signal and looked for things in one detector at the same time that we saw something. So having our signal kicked everything off faster than if they had been alone, because then they had the coincidence of our event and something in one of their detectors.
The observatories that detect gravitational waves, they can't actually localize a place in the sky from which, an exact place from which the gravitational wave originated. Is that right? And how would we go about doing that?
So what they can do is they can localize it to a region of the sky. I can't remember off the top of my head how big a region it was, but compared to what an optical telescope can see, it was a big region. I think there were 43 galaxies in that region that were potential to be followed up. So they were able to narrow it to that region. The optical astronomers cataloged the galaxies in the area, and then they went and started looking at the individual galaxies to look for a change. And these were the type of galaxies you would expect a short gamma ray burst from. And I believe it was the third one they looked at, they got lucky, where they saw something bright that hadn't been there before. And then they can localize it very precisely to exactly where the event was. And you need that for following up with optical telescopes, X-ray and radio. Unlike LIGO or GBM, which see most of the sky, these telescopes have to be looking at one spot. And that's how you know that this is exactly the event that's caused all of this and exactly where it came from. The galaxy gives you information about the distance of the optical counterpart. There's also distance information from the gravitational waves themselves, so you kind of have to have those match up. So that's one of the things that you need it for. And in order to make sure everybody is looking at the same spot, because if you're looking at a different spot, then you're tracking something else.
You actually use the term LIGO. Would you explain what LIGO is?
LIGO is the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. It consists of two very large ground-based systems, one's in Louisiana and one's in Washington State. And there's a third detector called Virgo, and I don't recall what Virgo stands for. It's in Italy, and it came newly online shortly before this event that we saw on August 17th last year. And they helped localize the event because they didn't see it, and there was only a small region of the sky they couldn't see. So the fact that they didn't see it narrowed down where it was in the sky even better. And GBM helped that too. With GBM, we can localize the gamma ray burst we see. So not only did it happen 1.7 seconds after the gravitational wave, it was in the same part of the sky as well. So we had a really strong chance. I believe it's the chance probability is 1 in 20 million of the two events being from the same thing. So it's strongly confirmed that they're related. And then all of the follow-up with optical finding what they call a kilonova. People may have seen stories that it produces gold and other heavy elements. So there's lots of interesting things about this event.
How far away is it?
130 million light years. And that's something cool we could use with the gravitational waves and the gamma rays, because they got here 1.7 seconds apart. And so the gravitational waves and the gamma rays traveled 130 million light years, got here 1.7 seconds apart. That tells us that the speed of gravity is the same as the speed of light to one part in one quadrillion, which means it's the same. And no measurements have even ever come close to that. That's something Einstein predicted, but it hadn't been well measured before.
In the late 1800s and early 1900s, Edward Pickering and his colleagues at Harvard Observatory gave some women an opportunity to study astronomy and to make great contributions to astronomy. So Edward Pickering and also Harlow Shapley were great mentors for women who were actually called computers at that time. Can you point to any one person at Marshall who has been a good mentor for you as a woman?
Probably the best mentor I've had was only here temporarily from NASA headquarters. Her name is Linda Spark, and she was actually acting. She came and was the principal investigator of GBM for a year shortly before I was, and she is an incredible reader of people and an incredible communicator and an incredible scientist. And a lot of the communication skills and how to represent GBM in a good light were really important things that I learned from her.
Similarly, on that note, Henrietta Leavitt, do you remember Henrietta? She was involved in making the discovery that there was a relationship between the period of changing light intensity of variable stars and their brightness, which helped us determine distances to stars. So now that you've been involved in this historic discovery of the relationship between many different wavelengths of light and gravitational waves, what kind of discoveries? I mean, it's sometimes impossible to predict what other discoveries are out there, but what would you like to see?
That's a tough one. It's hard to predict what kinds of things we'll see. I guess one thing that would be interesting based on something we've already seen was in September of 2015, GBM saw a very weak gamma ray signal 0.4 seconds after the merger of two black holes. The problem was neither we nor LIGO detected that signal very well in terms of location on the sky. We both kind of said it's over there and you don't have to see where I'm pointing. It's just like maybe a third of the sky. We both said, yeah, it's over there somewhere. So we don't know if that event was really related. And mergers of black holes aren't supposed to produce electromagnetic radiation. So they're not supposed to produce light because there's not supposed to be enough stuff left around to make the light. So that's a curious thing. We wonder if that was just a coincidence or if it was something real. So that's one thing I would like to see, enough events to see if that was real. So I'd kind of like to see a real one. Yeah, that's a hard one.
March is Women's History Month, and you, as leader of the GBM team, have made history with the unambiguous discovery of a multi-wavelength counterpart to a gravitational wave, essentially opening up a new field of astronomical research. Now, I know you have two children, a boy and a girl. What kinds of opportunities do you see for both of them in the future?
I don't know if either one of them is interested in what I do. They have some interest in space. I think there will be lots of opportunities. My daughter is probably most interested in volcanoes, potentially on other planets. She thought it was really cool when she discovered that was a possible field of study. My son strikes me as one who will be an engineer, so he's probably going to be building the satellites to do these things, or engineering something else, because that's his love. We do have somebody who's not a child, but we have a young graduate student on our team, Rachel Hamburg, who has been involved in this event from the beginning, and I love to see her enthusiasm and her dedication to this and just how much she's learned, and it's great to have somebody young to be a part of it. It reminds me of sometimes how fun it all is. It's easy to forget. So seeing that youth and enthusiasm and energy is just great.
Now, you have a unique way of relaxing from the stresses of your career. Would you say a little bit about how you keep moving?
Well, I guess my unique way of relaxing is running around in the woods with my friends for hours and hours. I'm an ultra runner. I love some days being out there and after rain splashing in the puddles and feeling like I'm five running around in the woods with no mom to tell me that I'm not supposed to get all wet and muddy. So I get wet and muddy.
I can relate to that. So is there anything that we haven't discussed that you would like to add?
I guess one thing I would like to add is that with it being Women's History Month is that being a woman in science isn't always easy. It's definitely improved since I started out, but there's a lot of strides that could be improved in terms of equality and implicit bias and how people see each other. And I guess the thing that I'm trying to do personally is trying to make sure that none of the younger women working for me miss any opportunities. I'm doing my best to promote them as well as I possibly can. And I find sometimes at conferences I will seek out young women who look a little lost and go talk to them. I'm definitely an introvert myself, and I find that if I see the young woman at the conference, the reception or something, who looks like she's uncomfortable and not sure if she should be there, I try to go talk to her because, honestly, I feel the same way. So I find that they seem to really appreciate that. And realizing that I'm no longer a young woman, so I can possibly be a mentor to some of these people. So
really excellent answer. Thanks, Colleen.
Thanks, Mitzi.
Dr. Colleen Wilson-Hodge, her team, and researchers around our planet continue to sift through the data of that groundbreaking discovery to learn more about gravitational waves and other cosmic mysteries. She spoke with Community Newsroom producer Mitzi Adams, who also works at NASA. Find links to more information on this topic and check out this interview again at WLRH.org. Just look for the Public Radio Hour under the Programs tab. This is the Women's History Month episode of the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville. Women don't have to change the way we think about the universe to make a big change in a person's world. Just take it from Frances Akeridge, who used her cell phone to take our self-interview and submit this entry to our Unfamous Women of History project.
Who am I? Where do I live? I am Frances Akeridge. I live in Huntsville, Alabama. Who is a woman in my life that I admire? I admire my sister, Therese Ellen Wendt. How did I first meet this person, and what was my first impression of her? I met Therese soon after she was born. and I could see, even at a very young age, that she was very sensitive and fragile. How I was surprised later that even in her death, how strong she was. What is my favorite thing about this person? My favorite thing about Therese Wendt is her noble ideals. She wrote software to connect regional hospitals and dreamt of being the Secretary of Health and Human Services for our government. What is my favorite story about this person? My favorite story is the story of her life and her death. She survived a brain hemorrhage, a devastating brain hemorrhage, went on to excel at the Department of Agriculture and earned the right to go back to school to earn her master's degree. She went on to have, later in her life, she had ovarian cancer. Yet, even when she was dying, she lit up when visitors came by. Why is this world a better place because of her? She is proof that even after birth, miracles do happen. What is the most important thing this person has taught me? Therese has taught me to roll with the punches, change directions when we have to, yet still never give up. If I could say one thing to Therese, what would it be? Thank you, Therese, for your light shining on a path for all of us.
Thanks to Frances Akridge and Cricket Hoffman for being part of our Unfamous Women of History project. Stay tuned to 89.3 Huntsville for more chances for you to join the broadcast in the coming weeks. You can find tonight's Women's History episode of the Public Radio Hour at WLRH.org and also on our Facebook page. In tonight's final segment, we look to the future and get some advice that will help up-and-coming businesswomen and everyone else, too. WLRH Community Newsroom producer J.Q. Ellis spoke with two Huntsville womanpreneurs, L'Oreal Jones and Joy Ragland. These two ladies recently took part in a unique art project by photographer Doc Savage that created pictures of historic women who have appeared on the cover of Essence magazine. Joy got to portray one of her heroes and all-around badass, Grace Jones. And that's where our conversation begins, with women who inspire.
You don't say no to Doc Savage.
Right.
When Doc contacts you, you never say no. So I'm like, okay, I can go and I can do it. And he's like, you're going to be Grace Jones. And when he told me that, I literally like sat and anything that I had. And I was like, I am going to do it because I could be Grace Jones for a day. Absolutely. Like, I was like, I'm dropping everything. So I literally was like, yes.
I saw you were connected to Grace Jones and you were redoing the Grace Jones in my brain. I just saw you as Grace Jones. And it was just, I was like, oh, yes, honey. Most
so
definitely.
So much character
yes,
and energy.
Everything.
Yes.
And then when I started studying what she did and how she influenced the history of modeling and acting.
Modeling, acting, everything.
And you fit like, I mean, it was just like prophecy, right? So as it pertains to, you know, history and women's history happening now, who were some of the influential women that made an impact on your life?
Claire Huxtable.
I just love, I adore Claire Huxtable. Just the wisdom and the intelligence and the class that she exuded, being a mother and being, you know, all these different roles that she played, and she just made it look so flawless. So I just really admire her. If there was someone I had to pinpoint from a family perspective, definitely Claire Huxtable. So current day, Beyonce.
Who? On a run.
Who?
Right? What is happening now?
What? I've always been a B fan, but it wasn't until I went to one of her shows and my life was changed. Her work ethic, her performance, it is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It makes me look at my life and be like, okay, get it together.
Get your life together.
You know what I'm saying?
What would Beyonce do?
What would B do? And so then women from the civil rights movement, they definitely inspired me. Coretta Scott King, just being able to be by the side of Martin Luther with everything that they had to endure. And she was there. She was the rock. But it's so inspiring to know, you know, that we can play so many roles and have so many hats. And as a woman, I feel like that's a superpower all by itself.
You know what? That is so true. We have to consider that women in history is just now becoming a thing that mm-hmm. we highlight. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But we often forget that they were making history in the Absolutely. Moment of what they were doing. We see that as a way to yeah. propel us mm-hmm. or to inspire us in what we're doing now yeah. is making history.
Yep.
Joy, I know that you're a model. Yeah. I know that you're an author. What about other influencers in your industry? How do you feel like those women and what they did made a significant road or map for you to open up right. doors for what you're doing right now?
Right. There is someone that I look to, and this woman is an amazing actress. Her name is Taraji P. Henson, mm-hmm. and she just embodies everything that I can relate to. Taraji didn't get her first big role until she was the age of 42 years old.
Wow.
I'm 29. I feel like I'm already behind. And because I feel like that, having her tell her testimony or even what she's doing, she said she does not feel that she made it until she accepted that role as Cookie on mm. Empire. Just because of her being on that role, all it takes is that one role, that one thing. You can't look at your age and say, oh, it's too late, or oh, I can't do it now, or oh, I'm too old. We have so many people watching us and have Absolutely. So many people who support us and who love us and see the things in us that we don't necessarily see in ourselves.
Yeah. I think that is probably one of the challenging things we face. You know? Yeah. I know, L'Oreal, you work with a lot of young ladies. What is one of the biggest challenges that you see in our young ladies right now?
The perception of reality on social media. Unfortunately, we battle with the good and the bad that comes from social media, because social media can be used for an amazing platform. You can use it, you know, for business, to promote positive things, whatever. And we see a lot of that. It's some good on it. But then you're faced with all of the stereotypes and all of the things that people think you have to be, because the reality stars are like this. So when I deal with young girls, their life, their livelihood is based on shaping what, who they think they should be on social media. Mm. And so that's a very hard mountain to climb, to be okay with unlearning what you've known, what is acceptable and what's not.
Exactly.
So I think social media is a big hurdle. I'm not perfect. This is where I came That's from. Right. But because I came from here and I've upgraded, you can most definitely positively do the exact yeah. same thing. And I'm going to show you how. I'm going to walk yeah. you through it. I'm not just going to tell you. I'm going to hold your hand as best I can and walk you through it.
We talk about mm-hmm. history happening now. We talk about as it was in the past and how it influenced us. Joy, maybe you can answer this. What are some of the things that you think that we should be doing? And how are you making a difference right now that will affect the future of our young ladies?
Mm. One thing that we should definitely be doing is being honest. Not Absolutely. Only with ourselves, but being honest with others allows us to have a greater reach with the people that surround us.
Being strong means that we're living through history from the examples Absolutely. Of the history mm-hmm. that we had
right.
from Prior leaders to. Like Grace Jones, finding yeah. motivation in what we're doing now. So L'Oreal, tell me about some of your current projects.
I'm opening up a storefront studio to where I have women renting space for me to do makeup and hair. It's all about creating opportunity for other people to do what they love.
Yeah.
When you're able to really do what you love, your life is better. To create history by being the first person in my family to, you know, just break the tie of living paycheck yeah. to paycheck, you know, to live truly in the overflow and to show people what they look like. So that's one thing. And then I also teach dance at a studio. I pray just we just continue to grow and blossom as well. The other studios here, it's room for everyone
yes.
to yeah. do amazing things. So.
Joy, tell me some of the yeah. current projects that you have going on, like right now.
Oh my goodness, there's so many to choose from.
Joy, you only get two.
Oh, I only get two.
Oh my goodness. She's a woman of many talents.
I know. Something currently, I'm working on an empty hangar project right now. It's based out of New York. And they saw my style. And they nice. Want to know, how was I influenced by my style? How was I influenced? How I am, who I am today. And I was like, oh my God, I got to do this. I was just honored, first and foremost. And I could not believe that someone from New York was reaching out to me because of this. So I'm sitting here in Huntsville. My husband and I, we're in real estate, of course. And we are working on a huge project here in Huntsville, Alabama. We're working on something that we can do that can make a difference here where we're at right now.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, ladies, you know what? I'm so excited that you came in the studio with me today. It's been
yes.
great
yes.
conversating with you about history here. That's happening now amongst my happening sisters. Now. beautiful women. We all share the industry together. I really appreciate you for coming on this project.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
So is there anything, Joy, that you would like to leave with or add with today?
Oh, my goodness. I just want to leave anyone that is either watching or hearing this. I want you to know that there are no barriers of what you can do, who you can become, or what you can achieve in life. Don't let anything stop you. Don't let anything hinder you. And I'm not talking about your age. I'm not talking about whether you're single or not. I'm not even talking about whether you have kids or not. Don't let nothing stop you. And don't get caught up in anyone's identity except your own. You become you, you move in you, and you do things that are going to benefit you and others at the same time. Nothing can stop. When I tell you that it is so easy to engulf yourself in what everyone else is doing, especially now with social media, as L'Oreal said earlier, don't allow yourself to be caught up in that. You get caught up in yourself so much to where no one can tell you about who you are or what you're doing or what you cannot do or what you can do. You do it for you and do it for your happiness and do it for whatever's going to make you successful in the end. So that's what I want to leave you with. Just do you, and just make sure that you do it in a matter of which you plan it, you have goals, you achieve it, and you knock it out.
Yes,
that's what I want to leave you guys with.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Joy.
You.
Thank you, L'Oreal.
Well, Joy said a mouthful. Okay. Like she pretty much handled most things. But I guess to add to that, I'll say when you are yourself, you give other people the freedom to be themselves as well.
Right.
You know, when you really just maximize who you are, you give other people permission to be okay with being themselves. And so another thing I'll say is don't be afraid of failure. To reach success, a few failures are inevitable. You're going to fall a couple of times. But if you don't take risks, then you won't know what that feels like. You won't, you know, so take risks. If you fail, it's okay. You learn from it. It's never a loss. You learn from it. You pick it back up and you keep it moving. Aaliyah said it best. If at first you don't succeed,
that's it.
Dust yourself off and try again. So don't be afraid to fail. You are going to reach success. God has given you gifts. He's given you talents. You have, you know, potential. If you don't have the best family situation, if you don't have the best support system, you still have all the resources that you need to do what you need to do. There are people that are meant to be in your life who are going to help you get to where you are supposed to get to. But if you never try, if you never take those risks, if you never take those leaps of faith, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, get out there and just get your feet wet. Be yourself doing it.
Thanks, ladies. History happening now. Be yourself. Be you. Be true. And jump.
That was Huntsville businesswomen L'Oreal Jones and Joy Ragland speaking with Community Newsroom producer JQ Ellis, who was recently named as one of Huntsville's top entrepreneurs. Way to go, JQ. This has been the Women's History Month episode of the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville. We hope you enjoyed it. You can find audio from tonight's show at WLRH.org. Just look under the Programs tab for the Public Radio Hour. And it's also on the WLRH Facebook page. You'll also find links to more information about some of the things you heard tonight. Tune in this weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features every Thursday night at 7. Thanks for tuning in. For 89.3 Huntsville, I'm Brett Tannehill.